All right, so this morning, so now, the word grace appears in the King James Version of the Bible 170 times, and that's more than the word forgive, it's more than the word belief, it's even more than the word hell, right? But yet, the word grace is still a word that we struggle to define, and you know, especially when we talk about extending grace. And a little while back, there was a little incident with a relative of mine. And you know, it was kind of one of those family altercations, and it kind of escalated and blew up, and there were some lengthy text messages exchanged and some lengthy phone calls and maybe a Facebook post or two. You guys don't know anything about that, right? The near family members. No, I didn't think so. But anyway, you know, this went on for a couple of weeks, and finally, one day I was talking to this relative on the phone, and you know, I just thought to myself, I said, you know what, I'm just going to extend them some grace, and I'm just going to extend them some grace and just let this thing go and just move on from it. And then in turn, on the other hand, they said to me, well, thank you for extending me grace. And so the whole thing kind of went away, even though I still kind of had some hurt feelings about it. I still wasn't completely cool with what had went down and how things had gone in that situation. And I'm sure it was the same thing for my relative. And so I started to think about that a little while later, and I was like, did I really extend them grace? You know, and did they really want grace from me? Or did we just want to smooth the whole thing over and move past the issue because we didn't really want to deal with it and get to the root of it? And so I want to talk to you this morning about extending grace. So we're going to be in a couple of different passages. The main one is Mark chapter 6, and then we're going to jump over to Matthew chapter 11 a little bit later if you want to mark that. And we are going to jump around a little bit. I don't like doing that. That's one of my pet peeves, but just the way it laid out, it's the only way it kind of made sense. And so we're going to look at a narrative, a story, and we're going to look at it from the perspective of two kings. The first king is Herod Antipas, and the second king is the king of all kings, Jesus. Right? And so I want to give you a little bit of context to connect the dots this morning with this scripture. And this is just a little bit of chart, and really just a chart that kind of illustrates a lot of drama, okay, surrounding our first king here. And so at the top of that chart there, this is just kind of a family org chart, you can see Herod the Great. And Herod the Great was a great king, and we know him from the Christmas story because he's the guy who tried to kill who? Jesus, right? He tried to kill Jesus. Well, like all kings, and most kings at that time, he had a lot of wives and a lot of kids. And so the second level there are just some of his wives there. And then the green level there are some of his sons, his heirs to his throne. And so the first one that we're going to talk about is Herod Philip. Now, Herod Philip was one of the sons that we know about. He didn't rule anything. You know, he didn't have any territories to rule or any nations to rule. He was just sort of kind of a guy, you know. And he was married to a young lady by the name of Herodias. And they had a daughter named Salome. Now, as the story goes, King Herod had another son by the name of Herod Antipas, who's going to be kind of one of the kings that we really focus on today. Herod Antipas and Herodias somehow come together, and they end up hooking up and deciding that they're in love, and they want to get married, right? So Herodias divorces Herod Philip, marries Herod Antipas, right? And now, instead of Herod Philip, Herodias, and Salome being one big happy family, now the one big happy family is Herod Antipas, Herodias, and Salome. Now, she's just married. They're marrying brothers, marrying sisters. You got all that? I mean, is that not juicy drama? I mean, read your Bibles. I mean, I you don't even need cable television. I mean, when you start to read these stories. So, clear as mud, huh? You know, all that drama. All right. So, the marriage happens, and they're one big happy family, and everything's going great. But there's just one problem, and the problem is really a person, and that's John the Baptist. Now, Herod Antipas is ruling over Galilee, and it's a Jewish area. And so John has a really big problem that Herod Antipas married his brother's wife while he's still alive, and he's saying, hey, that's against the law. You can't do that. It's unlawful for you to marry your brother's wife while he's still alive. And so he starts to openly preach and defy King Herod Antipas. And so he starts to hold him accountable. So he's holding him accountable in public. And, you know, when he's speaking out against the king, this is a terrible, terrible thing to do, because it never ends well for the person that speaks out against the king. And so we'll pick up in verse 17. And we're going to switch off slides. There's four of them. I'll read the first. You guys can read the second. I'll read the third, and then you guys can read the fourth. So verse 17. For Herod himself had sent and laid hold of John and bound him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother, Philip's wife, for he had married her, because John said to Herod, "It is unlawful for you to have your brother's wife." Therefore, Herodias held it against him and wanted to kill him, but she could not. For Herod feared John, knowing that he was a just and holy man, and he protected him. And when he heard him, he did many things and heard him gladly. Officers, the chief men of Herod, and Herodias' daughter herself came and danced and pleased Herod and those who sat with him. The king said to the girl, "Ask me whatever you want, and I will give it to you." He also swore to her, "Whatever you ask me, I will give you, up to half my kingdom." So she went out and said to her mother, "What shall I ask?" And she said, "The head of John the Baptist." Immediately, she came in with haste to the king and asked, saying, "I want you to give me at once the head of John the Baptist on a platter." But because of the oaths and because of who sat with him, he did not want to refuse her. Immediately, the king sat executioner and commanded John the Baptist to be killed. So, Herod was a graceless man. And, you know, in this passage, you know, we can learn a lot of things from Herod about extending grace. And, you know, I tend to learn more from villains than superheroes. I hate to admit that. But the first thing we learn from Herod is that, you know, Herod didn't love John. And first of all, you know, he put him in jail, in a miserable prison. You know, and secondly, you know, on the surface, you know, it looks as if Herod's actually kind of doing John a favor by not killing him and just keeping him alive, because normally, if somebody spoke out against the king, they wouldn't make it that long. But really, he kept him alive out of fear that he recognized him as a holy man. And he was afraid of the consequences, that if he killed him, what would happen. And then secondarily, you know, for his own judgment, or for his own enjoyment, that he actually enjoyed listening to John speak and having him around. And so, you know, really extending grace has nothing to do with us. You know, and when we extend grace, you know, it should be all about uplifting and edifying the other person. And, you know, at any point, if it's our intent to get something out of it, you know, it's really not a true extension of grace. So second thing that we can pick up from Herod, you know, extending grace is a value, and it's not a priority. See, priorities change, values don't. See, stopping at Starbucks, you know, in the morning on the way to get your coffee is a priority. Feeding your kids breakfast before you leave the house is a value. Now, some of you are looking at me like, "Hey, Mike, you got those two mixed up." You know, and no. Starbucks is absolutely the value. But you know, Herod offers the illusion, you know, that he values John's life. But, you know, at the simple whim of his daughter, he completely changes, you know. And you know, value is something that's true to who we are, and it doesn't change. And priorities, we can kind of take them or leave them. Third thing we learn from Herod, extending grace, you know, is not self-serving. You know, and it kind of gets right to the heart of the passage that Jen just shared. You know, and throughout the narrative, you know, at every step of the way, you know, Herod offers someone something to benefit himself. And, you know, we already mentioned, you know, why he didn't kill John. But, you know, when he offers Herodias, you know, whatever she wants in return for her dance, it's because he was pleased. And he follows through on a request, you know, not necessarily because he wants to do that, but it's because he's afraid of he'll look weak, and that he's afraid that he'll look soft in front of his guest if he doesn't go through with it. And lastly, you know, extending grace is not a free pass. You know, I mentioned Herod would have normally killed John the Baptist right away, but he extended to him, you know, really essentially a temporary free pass to kind of keep him around. But, you know, free passes don't really deal with the real issue, right? They just cover him up. Because the real issue was that his wife, Herodias, had a big issue with him, with John the Baptist, and she held a grudge against him. But he didn't want to deal with that. And so this is one of the toughest ones, because for us, and kind of as I laid out that situation with my relative, you know, it's easy for us sometimes just to hand out the free pass. You know, it's easier for us to do that instead of to really deal with the real issue, just to say, that's okay, I'll extend them some grace and just move on. All right, so let's get into some application here. And in order to do this, we need to jump back to another verse, or jump over to another verse that kind of takes us back to some of John's time in prison. And so at this time, you know, we're in Matthew 11, verse 2. And so John's in prison, and it's not very fun. Herod has him in a very remote castle in the desert. And he's isolated, and there's no food, there's no jailers, there's no water. The only thing he gets is what his friends, you know, bring him. And so he's not doing well, he's miserable, and nobody's coming to help him. Nobody's coming to rescue him. And it's been about a year. All right, so let's pick up the verse. And when John had heard in prison and about the works of Christ, he sent two of his disciples and said to him, "Are you the coming one, or do we look for another?" Jesus answered to them, "Go and tell John the things which you hear and see. The blind see, and the lame walk. The lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear. The dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. And blessed is he who is not offended because of me." So in this passage, you know, we learn a few things about Jesus and about extending grace. And the first thing we learn is that Jesus loved John. I mean, he said that John was the finest person born of a woman. I mean, think about that. If Jesus said that about you, the finest, aren't we all born of a woman? I mean, it's everybody. That's how highly he thought about John. That's how much he loved John. The second thing we learn is that Jesus shows us that extending grace is not always a free pass. I mean, he could have easily went over and bailed John out of prison and just broke him out. But instead, he used his words to speak truth to John. You know, because he knew that bailing him out of prison and just giving him a free pass wouldn't have dealt with his real issue at that time. You know, John's circumstances, you know, after he was in prison for about a year and in horrible, deplorable conditions, you know, he started to have some doubts. And he started to say, are you really the one that I said you were? And Jesus knew he needed something much more. Because, you know, his issue was no longer the physical prison that he was in. It was a spiritual prison. And no matter how much he wanted to bail him out because he loved him, you know, that wasn't the best thing for John. You know, they would almost been self-serving. And sometimes, you know, the truth, it's the best thing we can do. It's just speaking life to the real issue instead of looking out and trying to get a quick fix. The third thing is that Jesus shows us that extending grace is not self-serving. And so we've established that John's really struggling at this point. And, you know, in our culture, you know, we really don't like to struggle that much, and we really don't like to see, you know, other people struggle that much. And, you know, especially our friends and relatives that we're really close to. You know, I don't know how many times I've heard mothers, you know, refer to themselves as mama bears if somebody tries to mess with their kids, right, or mess with their husband or son, or dad saying they got 12 shotguns for the first guy that tries to date his daughter, right? You know, we don't like to struggle very much. And, you know, there was a friend of ours, and we kind of went through the same thing, and their teacher, their daughter's teacher, told them that they were behind on a few subjects. and that they needed some help to get caught back up. And, you know, our friend thought that that was a really bad thing. The first thing was the fear that, you know, their kid was going to be behind, their kid wasn't going to go to Harvard, or, you know, wasn't going to be the next Mark Zuckerberg or something like that. But I started to think about that because we went through the same thing. We were told the same thing about Vanessa. And, you know, in Japan, they kind of view that type of thing a little bit differently. You know, in their education system, if there's a student that gets straight A's, so if they're a math wizard and they get straight A's, they don't get rewarded for that. But instead, what they reward is that if there's a math student that's getting a C-level grade and they move that up to a B, that gets praised. That gets rewarded. And it's because they appreciate and they reward and celebrate the struggle. And, you know, struggle is a good thing because it can make us better. Also, when it comes to extending grace, you know, sometimes the truth is the best thing we can do for someone is to just let them struggle. And the last point Jesus taught us here about extending grace is that grace is about balance. And so you've been sleeping for the last 10 minutes or so, come back. You'll get the whole point right here. Okay? And come right back. In John 1:14, Jesus is described as being full of grace and truth. You know, Jesus had this balance of grace and truth. You know, and when you look back on his life, you know, he really spent his entire life putting this balance into action. You know, the woman at the well, calming the seas, you know, when him and the disciples were in the boat and he was sleeping. I could go on and on and on. But the thing about those stories is that the reason that they're so powerful isn't necessarily what Jesus did, but it's the truth that he spoke behind them. And so too often, you know, we just forget to balance grace with truth. You know, we're heavy on the grace, heavy on the love, but we're a little weak and a little shy with the truth. And if our Lord was this balance of grace and truth, then we really need to be too. So let me illustrate it to you this way. So what do I have here? An extension cord, right? And what does this thing do? Extends power? It's doing a whole lot of nothing right now to me. I don't know. Just kind of a cord, huh? Right? But in theory, though, right, Anthony? You plug it in, and it powers something else, right? But the reality is that unplugged, it's just something that exists, right? But once we plug it in, what happens? It gets power, right? Current starts to flow, and now you can actually plug something into this other end and power something else, right? So we have to look at extending grace the same way. You know, grace is just the extension cord. Without truth, it's useless. See, when we plug in this cord and power starts to flow through it, now we got something. Now we can plug something in the other end of this. Now we can make that function. Now we can make that grow. Grace and truth are the same way. And you can't have grace without truth. Remember, Jesus was full of grace and truth. So let's wrap it up. I'm almost done. A little conclusion here. And we're going to go back to our original passage. Verse 21, which I mean Mark chapter 6, verse 21, just a few simple words. And then an opportune day came. Now, some translations will say that, you know, then an opportunity came, then an opportunity was presented. But even though on the surface, you know, this opportunity likely refers to Herod's wife's chance to get revenge on John the Baptist because she had the grudge, you know, it also presented an opportunity for Herod to exchange pressure for grace and to stand up against a decision that he knew was wrong, even at the risk of disappointing a loved one, you know, even at the risk of looking weak Herod had an opportunity to extend grace to his wife, to his daughter. He had an opportunity to extend grace to his friends. But he couldn't do it because he didn't get to the truth part. And so there's opportunities for us, you know, all around, all the time, to extend grace to others. And, you know, I was at a meeting down in Louisville, Kentucky, a few weeks ago. And I was meeting with a young lady, and she said something really impactful to me. She just told me a story really about her life. And so she said she was a single mom of three boys. And so that alone, I mean, and she's a very high-powered executive. I mean, you know, she's a very impressive person. But one of her sons, the middle son, has autism. And she's telling me the story about when he was 4 years old. And they live in this two-story house, and it's one of these newer houses where it's kind of like there's a window and it goes straight down. There's no, like, eaves or anything like that or any ridges. So it's a pretty rough fall considering the high vaulted ceilings. And so what he would do, this middle child with autism, is he'd go up to one of the rooms on the top floor, open the window, take out the screen, and try to jump out. And so she caught him, you know, quite a few times, literally with, like, one leg out, ready to go. And so she tried counseling, she tried therapy, you know, and she sat him down, talked to him, and just couldn't reach it. He kept trying to jump out of the window. So one day, she got her son, and she walked out the window, and her and him went up on the roof together to the very top. And as they got to the top of the roof, they're standing there together. And what she had done was she had stopped in the kitchen and brought a couple of eggs with her. And so she said, "Here, son, you take one." And she took one, and she tossed it off the roof, and it went to the ground and splat. And then she said, "Now you do it." He tosses one, goes on the ground, splat. He thought it was amusing at first, but then she got down at eye level and told him, "If you jump out of that window, that's what's going to happen to you. You're going to go splat. And just like mom's going to go down there and pick up those eggs and all the little bitty pieces, I'm going to have to go down and pick you up in all those little bitty pieces." You know, she stopped giving the free pass. She stopped going beating around the bush. She just extended him grace, the healthy dose of truth, and he got it. And he doesn't try to do that anymore. So you can't extend grace without truth. You can't extend grace without truth. So I want to land the plane this morning. I want to challenge you with two questions as you leave here today, and just think about these. How often are you cheating your friends and family out of spiritual growth because you're extending them grace with no truth? How often? How often are you cheating yourself out of spiritual growth when you want grace from your friends and family without the truth that asks you to change? And two powerful questions to ponder. And two questions that I think if we can just imagine what our lives could be like differently if we just tried to figure those out. I mean, how could somebody else's life close to us be different if we just tried to give them a little bit of truth? Let's pray.